Welcome to Dream Big with Jill Jack, a show that will inspire, educate, and encourage you to break down your barriers and follow your heart. Here's your host, Jill Jack, on Empower Radio.
Good day, Dream Big listeners. It is a good day. But you know what? Every day's a good day if you choose it to be. That's not always easy. I woke up cranky, but, you know, I didn't choose to stay there. And I don't even know, how can you wake up cranky? Like, you're not even awake yet. And I just was like, okay, nope, start doing your gratitude listing. And I did that. And one of the things on my list was that I get to come to Empower Radio. And I get to sit with my amazing buddy, Remy. And I get to have a wonderful guest. And we're going to jump in quick this time. Usually I have a bunch of stuff to talk about. This time we are just jumping in. I have this wonderful human being sitting next to me who it is her debut on radio. No pressure. Okay. So she is Patty Cunningham, and she is a dear friend of our recently, I hate to say, departed amazing artist, Allie Willis, who was an incredible songwriter. So we're going to talk about her. We're going to talk about your friendship, but we're going to talk about you first, okay? Because it's something everyone knows about ourselves is about ourselves. So tell me, first of all, you're from the Detroit area. You grew up in the Detroit area, did you?
Yeah, I'm born and raised in Detroit. I grew up on the east side. It's what everybody picks. It's like, are you east side, west side, north or south? I'm east side. I grew up over at Jefferson Chalmers area, and had a fabulous childhood, an incredible experience growing up in Detroit. And my dad ended up buying a business in Wyandotte, and I was a freshman in high school at the time, and we were supposed to move over to Grosse Pointe. And we had a very large family, and all my older brothers and sisters were leaving the house, so we wanted to downsize, etc. We had a massive five-floor house over there on Lakewood.
Awesome.
Five floors. It was great.
Oh, my God.
You could disappear and
fun.
Hide in many, many places.
How many kids?
Seven children.
Seven.
Yeah.
Where'd you fall?
Six out of seven. And we were late. Like, we were way at the tail end of my mother's birthing career. So we were a little spoiled.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned that earlier when we were chatting off set here. And yeah, we were spoiled. We were, you know, handed. But it was just about, for me, it was about getting on my bike in the morning, taking off, gone all day at the playgrounds, playing every sport imaginable. And then we moved. We ended up moving to Grosse Isle.
Oh, yeah.
Which it was culture shock for me because I was pissed. I was mad at my mom for about a year. Because there's no streets, no sidewalks, no street lights, no playgrounds, no stores, nothing to do.
Wow.
And my dad was, he said, all right, I'm going to take you to the country club and you can play tennis. And so I played tennis, and actually that's where I met Emily Gale, who all these years later, you know, we've reunited, and she's a dear friend as well. But I was born and raised in Detroit. I worked at Blue Cross Blue Shield for 30 years. I retired from there. And then my partner and I came into some little bit of an inheritance, and we wanted to come back to Detroit and make some sort of a stamp or a footprint or do something positive.
Oh, I love that.
So we decided to open up a laundromat, which was for ease of doing business and cash, and you can pretty much let it run itself. But in touring all of the local laundromats, we drove to every laundromat we could. And my goodness, what an eye opener. So that was the template for what not to create. You know, we wanted to create something beautiful
different.
And clean and nice and loving and build a sense of community.
Oh, I love that.
So we went to Lafayette Park, and we got the center square of the plaza. And our goal when we opened it up was we were going to, in order to build that sense of community, we have to show lots of love. So our motto was, let's lead with love. And so everybody that came in the store got a hug.
Oh my gosh, I need to go there.
You know, whether you wanted one or not, because believe you me, many people are adverse to strangers coming up and
I hug everyone.
Getting all up on them. So we had to, you know, it was a learning curve there, but bottom line is, it was the greatest way to start the day was to get in there, hang out with the customers, get to know people. And we were, we just had a beautiful time down there. And that's exactly what happened. And we ended up selling it. The new owner came back to us a few months later, probably 4 or 5 months later. And he said, "My God, ladies, I had no clue how revered you two are around here."
Aww.
And so for me, it's that's the footprint that you want to put down.
Absolutely.
That tells me that we did what we accomplished. It wasn't about making money. It was about giving back.
Your mission was love.
And providing something nice. You know, for example, we seems to be like on Sunday mornings, the elder gentleman would come in. And so we started introducing so-and-so to so-and-so and found out this one likes to play chess. Oh, you like to play chess? Me too. So we went and bought those little tables that have chess.
Yes.
And so now the guys are coming in together and they're all hanging out and they're coordinating their times on Sunday with to be there so they can be together and hang and play chess and do laundry. So the same thing happened with our ladies, the older ladies, where they would come in at a particular time and then they would form friendships and go to comedy clubs and, you know, do that kind of thing together and create a community.
Who would know,
you know,
out of a laundromat? Because
that's how it was when we grew up, right?
It was. But, I mean, so I guess no matter what you would have done, it would have, because of where you were coming from your heart, you created this. I just love that it was a laundromat. I mean,
right.
my first job was in, my mom got me a job at the dry cleaning. And you're right. It wasn't someplace where you went in and felt all warm and fuzzy. So the fact that you did this, you just changed everything, and it's just such a brilliant move. And when don't you find that when you come from the heart, it's successful?
It's always successful.
Right.
When you lead with love,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's how I was raised, but the responses, the comeback, the reactions, and the world is filled with people who sometimes don't really stop and think anymore. They just are so busy reacting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you read something on Facebook or you read something on social media and you get your
knee
keyboard
jerk.
And you start, reacting. It's like, well, wait a minute, think about this.
Mm-hmm.
But we wanted to just create positive, loving energy, that sense of community. You know, we miss the neighborhoods that we grew up. We can't find those anymore. I lived in Berkeley for probably 8 years and I don't know that maybe two of my neighbors would say hi because I love to sit on the porch.
Yeah.
And people are just so closed off.
Oh, you need to live in my hood.
Yeah.
I'm in Ferndale.
Oh,
we know
Ferndale.
Each other.
Yeah.
We go to dinner.
Out in Ferndale.
Oh, yeah.
It's first flat.
Best. But there's nothing like community. With Ferndale, where I live, our neighbors, I always say that they'll always be there for you, but they never get into your shit.
Right.
You know what I mean? They
right.
they know they're like everyone's got boundaries, but they're just so loving. And that's why I've never moved. I've lived there for 25 years.
Wow.
Okay. So let's talk about, well, when did you get married?
Oh,
so I want to hear about that.
I got married last summer on July 19th.
Yay.
And July 19th is my birthday.
Aww.
And July 19th is my spouse's birthday.
What?
Yeah.
Are you kidding
yeah,
me?
Yeah, I'm 56, you're 56, she's 1958, and we were born on the same date. So we thought, well.
How long were you together before you got married?
8 years, 9 years.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That's so beautiful.
And there's, you know, just a footnote on that. Growing up as a gay child, a gay kid, a little lesbian, a little budding lesbian in the hood there. You're not allowed to come out. It was rough. It was, you know, you were told that you were sick, all these different things. So you were always, you know, battling that fear. But for me, I never even dreamed about getting married. So I just completely put it out of my mind. I come from a very large family, lots of weddings, lots of this, that, and the other. Never even dreamed or pined about getting married. And then the notion of getting married, I mean, and then getting married, it was the most magical day of my entire life.
Right.
And then now that I'm married, it's something, there's like this shift.
Yeah, right.
Something deep inside you changes. And like Kelly was sick last week with that flu that's going around.
Thank
and
dear.
I felt such a deep devotion to attending to her every need.
That's beautiful.
And I like, who am I?
Right. Well, my neighbors, my best friends are gay, and they had been together for 23 years, mm. and they finally got married. And I have never been to a more emotional, passionate, I mean, just like, it was the most beautiful thing. It was in their backyard. You probably know them anyway, Dan and Casey, but they're amazing people. And just to, the celebration of it was just so much bigger, and it meant so much more,
right?
Because they waited so long. They had to wait, and now it was official and they could do it. And we, the whole neighborhood, I mean, I sang, my daughter ran like everything else, and it was just crazy, but it was fun. But it's so important that people understand what you had to go through in order to get to that point in your life. For the rest of us, you know, if I'm straight, you know, you get married,
well, it's
no big deal.
You were never allowed to do.
Right.
It was a very big takeaway. You're like, you're not allowed to do that. You are not
allowed. Which is insane to me. It's still
like,
to this day,
why?
Is insane to me. That, and yeah, well, let's just hope we never.
I'm urging all my pals, all my girls who have been together in these relationships. Like, I have a friend in California, 25 years they've been together, and they came to our wedding, and I talked to them. I said, you guys got to do this. It's a gift. Give it to each
mm-hmm.
other.
Right.
That whole getting married thing, it's amazing. And then 3 months later, they got married, we're on a plane to California and at their wedding, and it was amazing.
Oh, good for you. Way
you know?
To make that happen.
And we double honeymooned with them.
Oh, it's
we
awesome.
We went to Kauai, and they were like, come join us. Let's double honeymoon. We're like, ooh.
That sounds good.
Sure,
let's
I'm available.
Do that.
So,
all right. So let's talk. One of the reasons, you know, I'd love to talk about friendship and how important it is to you, and what it takes, what you think it takes to maintain a friendship. You had a long relationship, I believe, with Allie Willis, who is, you know, larger than life, was larger than life, and I still is larger than life, even though she's not on this planet. She's watching over all of us. How did you two meet? Just so the audience knows, Allie Willis is a Grammy Award winning singer-songwriter who also created so many other things in life, worked on The Color Purple, Broadway. You know, her resume is
chock full,
freaky. It's so incredible. How did you two meet?
Well, with this laundromat,
mm-hmm.
we spent all of our money construction and build out. So we didn't have any money to advertise. And my spouse, Kelly, was stalking her on Facebook. Now, I didn't know who she was, but this was on the beginnings of her putting together the D, which is her song that she wrote, and then thusly the video.
Right.
And I think it's 5,000 voices are on this one song, which was a feat that nobody has done.
Yeah, it's a world record, I think.
To layer 5,000 voices over her vocals.
Mm-hmm.
Was quite a feat, but they were shooting videos everywhere they went around town. It was a sing-along and these videos being shot. So Kelly thought, oh, she's going to be at the Whitney, and let's go there and see if she'll shoot at the laundromat. I mean, it's kind of kooky, but it might be fun. And she, if you just look at her, her physical appearance is the definition of kooky.
You can't miss her. Let's just say that. You
like
can't
Pam
miss
Adlon
her.
In her eulogy, she said, the first time I saw her, it was jarring. And I find
it is appropriate because you're kind of like, wow.
What
I
is
mean,
that?
But to me, like the freedom of the way she looked, it was just like, this who I am. And already you knew what you were going to get personality wise. You weren't going to get some shy introvert for sure. You knew exactly.
And that's that's how she was at home. You know, she stayed with us many times. She stayed with us in our home in Berkeley, in our loft over there at River Place, and then in our penthouse. And she stays with us for a week. That's how she is. She gets up and she's Allie Willis. That's who she is.
Yeah.
Looking just like that. But anyways, so we went to the Whitney. She was having a little thing there, and there was a whole bunch of folks, and she was sitting at this table filled with these women, and they were just carrying on. And finally, I waited for a little moment to get in there and insert myself, and I introduced myself, and I said, you know, we have this laundromat, and it's unlike any other, and I really pitched it. And she was like, oh, okay, I'll see what we can do. And then she came back to us and said, yeah, we're coming.
Oh, my gosh.
And so they came, and she brought her entourage, and we ended up clearing out everything. So we had laundry cart basket races. So she literally sat inside a laundry basket.
I saw a picture of that.
I've got a film and video. It's in her video. And we did these races all while singing this song. So that's how we met.
That's awesome.
And the first thing, she pulled into my office, and she walked into my office like she owned the joint. And I was digging that. I thought, all right. And then it was instant. The friendship was instant.
Isn't that amazing, when that happens?
Mm-hmm.
I love that. I love it when you have a spiritual bond with someone that you don't even know anything about yet, really, you know? And so we are, you know, I'm producing an incredible night. It's called Eleanor Fest, a celebration of women in music.
Yay.
And we really wanted Allie there. And unfortunately, she passed away on Christmas. And so you are going to be there, right, to
happily
accept an award that we are going to, not an award, excuse me. I screwed that one up. You're going to be there to introduce the finale of the show. And we are going to be covering a lot of her tunes. Now, she wrote, I have to tell you that Earth, Wind & Fire is my childhood backdrop. I mean, music, we had that nonstop. We had five kids in our family. Big house. My dad built this table that 700 people could stand on and dance.
Oh.
And we would play Earth, Wind & Fire, and all my friends would dance, and my dad would be down below, like, checking out all the chicks. It was pretty funny. But, my mom would pull him back. Okay, no. But Earth, Wind & Fire is, you know, and so here she was. She co-wrote September. She wrote the theme song, co-wrote the theme song for Friends, or wrote the theme song for Friends. I did not know about The Color Purple on Broadway until I started reading and doing more research about her. Did you ever witness some of this writing? Did you ever talk to her about what it was like to write these songs? Or, you know, and she was kind of desolate at the beginning when she wrote this, right? Like, food stamps and all. And
it, for her, it was, everything about her motivation, her commitment, she lived her entire career behind the eight ball in her head, because she fought all of her life for notoriety and her proper credits, her proper due.
Yeah,
she wrote 8 Mile. She won an Academy Award for 8 Mile, that her and Louis Resto.
Oh my gosh.
And she's not even she wasn't in the credits.
She wasn't in the credits, and Louis accepted the Grammy.
And she was in the bathroom at the time, big break when she was to go up there. She was supposed to go up there with Louis because they co-wrote it. And, she was in the bathroom at that time, and she missed out on it.
Ugh.
But she,
isn't that, it seems to happen more in the arts than anything else, as far as, you know, notoriety, respect, and it's exhausting.
It is.
And I can understand that. You know, I think that we live as artists in this kind of, like, we brace ourselves for rejection before we even, you know, so it's almost like we want to almost sabotage it because we're tired of being rejected or tired of not being respected or, you know, getting our due. And it's sad when it takes someone who passes away to get probably more notoriety than even when she had. I mean, yes, she was recognized in Detroit and she was so loved in Detroit. But do you feel that she felt frustrated even to the end, or?
Yes. It was her destiny. I don't know. She fought so hard, and it's kind of what I wanted to talk about at the thing is about, you know, making sure, and it's just the evolution of women in the U.S. of A. and in the world is, you know, even being gay back as a child, we talked earlier, it's no big deal now. There's even no gay bars to go to because every bar is a gay bar, right? So, she mastered. I was talking to her partner last week, and we were talking about it, and she's pretty devastated naturally, but she said something very interesting. She said, Pat, everything Allie took on, she mastered. The songwriting, you know, everything she put her hands on. She used to be a painter. She segued into painting at one point, and now I can't even imagine. I would love to get my hands on one of her things, her paintings, but we always talked about stuff. Like, you know, one night she came home late and she was staying with us, and I got up and we hung out and she was unwinding, and she had come from New York, and we were talking about The Color Purple.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you have to see this performance by this new girl, this young girl named Cynthia Erivo.
She's going to be the same birthday,
a superstar. And I had not heard of her. The Color Purple was just getting off and up and running. And so she sat in my kitchen island and we played this song. And she was, she's got that hair.
Right.
So we were listening to this song, and I was just mesmerized by this song that Cynthia sang. And then I pulled her hair back to peek at her face, and, you know, the tears were coming down. So she, you know, that was a big deal for her. She underplayed it, but yet her moving into the Broadway and writing the music and the lyrics and the songs for The Color Purple, and then being nominated for a Grammy and winning the Grammy, you know, her and Brenda Russell, her buddy, her partner, it was just over the moon stuff.
It's huge.
It's huge,
like,
to
pinch,
me.
Pinch yourself. Is this really happening kind of thing? And I just, you know, just knowing that and being a songwriter myself and knowing the struggles that you deal with, it doesn't ever stop your creativity. Your creativity is inside you. And if it doesn't come out, you like get sick. I mean, you physically get sick if you don't use it. You
or
know?
If you work on something exhaustingly and then it's never comes to fruition.
Yeah. But you just always have to risk it anyway. Like right. People look at me and sometimes, you know, I've said to my husband, why couldn't I just be like a normal like artist and just basically, you know, go get a gig, play, blah, blah, blah. No, I always have to do these grandiose things. But so when I look at her, it's so inspiring and it excites me because I feel like I have so much more to do still.
Right.
And to see that she was, I mean, because I want to paint, so I took art classes, you know, and then I saw that she did that and all of these things. So she, whether the world tried to stop her, she would not give herself
forward,
a limit.
Right.
She did not limit herself and she went for it anyway. And I mean, it's so sad that this, you know, my sister posted something on Facebook. I didn't get to read it yet, but that Van Gogh only sold one painting when he was alive.
Right.
Horrified.
It is. You can't even imagine that.
But he, you know, he still painted. He still painted. It didn't stop him. So here she was. And so that's why I think it is so important that we end this Eleanor Fest. And I wish to God she was here with us to join us on that. We're going to, you know, do a finale of her material. And, you know, if she was here, how do you think that she would feel about that?
She'd be all over it.
Okay.
She would go to anything that anybody was having going on. She would insert herself. She would be happy to do it. The more exposure, the better.
Mm-hmm.
But she was always willing to support. She was a city kid at heart. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what kept us linked with her. We were just city kids, but she was always available. She was very, very busy. She was always busy. And she always pushed herself to the limit.
Yeah.
And if you had something going on and you wanted her to come by, she would absolutely do her best to get over there.
I love that.
Always supporting everybody else. Anything Detroit, anything female, anything women, anything songwriter, she's there.
Well, I want all the listeners to get their tickets. It's May 2nd at the Redford Theater. It's called Eleanor Fest, a celebration of women in music. And I want everyone to see Patty come out on stage, no nerves, and to really send this message home. Because I don't think, I mean, every show I do, I beg people to consider supporting original music, supporting artists, that it's a win-win. They feel good when they come. We feel good giving to them what we do. And I don't think there's enough of that in the world. And lead with love. I think that, you know, you saying that, if there is anything that you can say about your friendship, what would couple words, you know, give me a couple words on how you would base your friendship with her.
She was the most unique person I have ever met. And in my life, I've met millions of people, it seems like. And she was the most unique person, but yet one of the most kindest naturally. She was always ready to help, ready to give, always very supportive. And that's my girl.
And she was real.
She's very real. Who she was underneath that outfit. But that outfit is who she was.
Right. So there is no faking.
That's her. That's her. Those clothes, those colors. You know, I had a dream the other night, if we have time.
Yeah, we do.
A little vision thing came to me in the middle of the night. I couldn't sleep. I was just kind of meditating. I went into this space, and usually it's like dark and gray.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I saw a flash of pink, a flash of yellow, and a flash of orange. And I'm like, what are these colors? So, and then I saw like a road, a picture of a road. So I get up the next morning, and I Googled pink, yellow, orange road. And a cartoon image, and I came up, and it was almost like her on the road to heaven. She's in, you know, in pink, bright, and that was one of her outfits.
Yes,
and the outfit that she recorded at the laundromat was pink, yellow, and orange. So I think it was her way of letting me know she's on her way to the pearly gates.
I love it, and so, I'm glad that she's looked
still
it
right
up.
Here.
I do that all the time.
She's still right here.
What is it? She's probably sitting with us right now. Well, I want to thank you, and I want to say that if you ever want a job in radio, I think you have it because your voice is awesome. You're a natural. I'm really excited that we were your first time.
You're too kind.
And
thank you.
I really look forward to you. And I want to say right now and to all the listeners, thank you so much for taking the time to come today, but also to support Eleanor Festen, actually come on stage and introduce what we're going to be doing, because I love community. I love to build community. And my favorite word is love, and I shove it down people's throats all the time.
Yep.
And if I can say anything to the Dream Big listeners today, go out there and hug a stranger. Just go out there and hug a stranger. Hugging is amazing. We are supposed to, I read somewhere you're supposed to get like 250 hugs a day. Well, we are all depleted on that. I know we don't have enough of it. So thank you again for joining us. And we'd love to have you come back sometime, okay?
Operation Can Do.
All right. Until then, you guys have a wonderful week. I'll talk to you next week.